That's entertainment, and that is the jingle that tells us that it is time for the entertainment slot here on the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio. Delighted to be joined in studio this morning by Michael Leddy, writer and blogger, and by Dohi Ramsey, who is marketing manager at On Greyland Theatre, standing in for Fionnuala on the programme this morning. A very good morning to both of you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Looking forward to this one. I have lists from both of you, and I'm going to chuck in a few bibs and bobs myself as well, because I get this opportunity regularly, infrequently, so when I do, I like to shtick my oar in. I want to start, though, with you, Michael, and first thing you have on your list is The Creator, which is showing in the cinema.
Yeah, that's in the cinema at the moment. That is, it's another one of those blockbuster type movies, although behind the scenes the budget was actually quite modest. It's one of those movies that didn't cost an arm, relatively speaking, to other blockbusters. And it's a dystopian future kind of scenario, 40 years in the future, and I was going to say mankind, but it's not really mankind. It's the West. It's America and the West are in a war against AI. So, and what's happened, I'm leaving out some details here, spoilers details, but what's happened basically is that a country called New Asia has become the home of AI after certain things have happened in the world. And they are protecting the artificial intelligence, which in this movie is robots basically run around, each one kind of completely it's sentient in its own right. So you have this movie where John David Washington, who people will remember probably best from things like Tenet and Black Klansman and those kind of movies, he's the lead in this. And he has to go in with a military unit to track down the programmer in New Asia who is behind all of this. So the movie was filmed in Thailand. And it was filmed almost like, it's almost like guerrilla filmmaking, except an $80 million budget. But it looks kind of very, you know, there's no green screening in this. It's not that kind of movie. So it's kind of down and dirty. Now, it has great visuals and they have fantastic vistas. And one thing they do very well in this movie is they create buildings and, you know, cityscapes that aren't real but look fantastic, because it's 40 years in the future, so things have kind of changed a wee bit. So it's the story of this guy who goes in and he has to track down, he and his team have to track down the programmer. But of course, he was undercover in this area 5 years earlier, and he was married, and there's a woman, and there's a B story, and there's other stuff going on. So by the time you get into the movie, about a half hour into it, his loyalties are somewhat divided. So saying no more than that, it's an action sci-fi movie. Predominantly, he's on screen the whole time. You get great supporting cast like Allison Janney, who people will know from The West Wing, and Mom, her sitcom, which ran for years, and she's excellent as sort of a hard-nosed military. She was so good, and this is not in any way disrespectful to the lead actor, but she was so good that I was like, I would watch a movie where she's playing a tough military. If she was the lead in this movie, I'd be more invested, because it would be great casting to have this woman of a certain age who is credible as a tough military leader.
I would watch Allison Janney on screen for an hour and a half.
She's amazing.
She is a brilliant,
fantastic,
brilliant actor.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Absolutely agree, completely. So yeah, so basically it's this mission, and he's paired with a child, and it's one of those stories, a bit like The Last of Us and a few other movies we've seen over the years, where he has to protect the child for various reasons. So the two of them are on the run for most of the movie. It delivers on the spectacle. Artificial intelligence, AI, is very much a hot topic at the moment. It has been with ChatGPT and various things, and it's more and more what we're talking about in the world. So the movie is very timely. What I would say, and what critics have said as well, now critics have embraced it. I mean, they've liked it. I think it's got like 69 or 67%. But they've said that it's very solid. Mm-hmm. And I would say, in terms of action, a couple of really good action set pieces, particularly towards the end. But I would say that it doesn't offer a lot of, if you're familiar with movies like Blade Runner or even Terminator, or a lot of the AI movies that we've had even in recent years, it doesn't really offer anything new. It tries, it's quite earnest, I think, in what it's trying to do, but I don't think it hits the mark. So you're best to just see it as an action movie, and I think critics have embraced that side of it. Nothing particularly new here, but it looks really good. The cast are very good, and I was pretty much entertained for the whole 2 hours, 10 minutes of the whole thing. So I would give it a thumbs up, but I would say, don't go in expecting another Blade Runner. Yeah. Although trying, you know, it's not going to really, you know, some of those AI movies would stay with you.
Yeah.
I don't think this one will, although it tries very hard. I could be wrong, but I think most critics have said as well, you've seen this kind of thing before, but gosh, they do it well.
I really enjoy that kind of thing, though. I have to say, it's right up my street.
Yeah.
You mentioned The Last of Us. That's one of my... We've had this conversation. That's one of my top programs of the year so far.
Well, it's that kind of dystopian, you know, everything, mm-hmm. the world is in disrepair. And the fact that it's in... And the other last thing I'll say on it is, because it's filmed in Thailand, because it's set in New Asia, you get a lot of parallels with this. One of the buttons that it pushes a lot is that America and the West are moving in to wipe something out. You got parallels with Vietnam, you got parallels with a lot of stuff, and that's very much deliberate and very much part of the narrative. And that works very well. So I like that aspect of it. But in general, it's just a big sci-fi movie. You got plenty of action, and I think it'll entertain you for 2 hours.
In terms of TV, and I just want to stick in what our big TV obsession is at the moment. I think you might have discussed this with Greg last week, Michael, but I want to stick my oar in this because I am so impressed by it, is Obituary.
Oh, yes.
I think Obituary has... And I know it's part, at least part made by Hulu, isn't it, in the States, so it's not necessarily an RTE production.
That's something I haven't done as look. Yeah, I remember when they were talking about this a long time ago here on the show, when they were in the early pre-production, before they were filming or while they were filming, they did mention something like that.
Yeah,
you're right.
Made with
there's,
Hulu.
There's outside
and,
money.
And there's Borskin on the hair. And there's, I mean, you know, when you look at the front credits, there's about 18 different sort of things come up. Have you had a chance to watch this yet?
I haven't yet, Donald, no.
I can tell you, it's filmed in Ballyshannon and Bundoran.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
And it is magnificent.
Yeah. Did you finish it? Have you worked
on it? No, I haven't. We finished episode 4 last night.
Oh, you're doing well, okay, yeah.
We finished episode 4. So, and the interesting thing is, you get it, it's presented as a sort of a black comedy. And when I initially read about it, and we actually spoke to the writer on the show a few weeks back, it was presented kind of as a black comedy. The basic story, what you're told in the blurb, is it's a young journalist, Elvira, is working as an obituarist in the local Kilraven Chronicle in Kilraven, and Kilraven being Ballyshannon with some shots of Bundoran.
It's great
as well.
Naming, isn't it? Elvira and Kilraven.
You're just waiting for Lenore to walk in and him to go, nevermore.
Yes.
But that's another story.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right.
But the basic thing is, she's told by her, she writes the obituaries, and she's told by her editor that because of cost cutting, she can only get paid per obituary that she writes. So she starts knocking people off in order to create obituaries. And
isn't
that's
a good
what
idea?
You're told.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
what you know. And you're going into it. And it's almost presented like a black comedy in the style of Colin Bateman, Christopher Brookmeyer, that kind of deeply black comedy. There's actually a very interesting story developing, which I wasn't aware, and I'm not going to say anything about it, but there's some really interesting, and some of the character interactions, who's brilliant in it is Michael Smiley.
He is
the best I've ever seen him. Now, and people will know him from panel shows and things like The Blame Game on RTE, and he's played various, and he's done some stand up in his day, I think, as well. His acting is he's the big revelation to me, actually,
right?
Is the acting of Michael Smiley. And as the show's gone on, he has become better and better. In fact, all the actors are becoming...
It's a good cast, I've only seen the first episode. Yeah. I wanted to watch episode 2 this week, and then I got sidetracked by the Long Shadow on ITV, so that devoted my night to my evenings. But I want to get back to Obituary. Yeah. The cast are very good. The lady playing the best friend...
She is great.
She's great. And I was up at the Ballyliffin Film Festival last weekend, saw some films up there, and she's in a movie which I had not been aware of called Lakelands. She's the female lead in that. Mm-hmm. And I had seen her in Obituary, and then I saw her in that, and I was like, wow, she's got a career ahead of her, I think.
Yeah,
she's
totally. And she's her character is developed. And that's what I love about this is episode to episode, the characters are getting a lot more interesting. And some of the smaller characters and recurring characters and characters you don't expect to recur suddenly come back. And what was a lovely surprise for me too is an actor who I've known since I was 5 because her mother taught me in primary school and she was a neighbour, is Carrie Crowley.
Oh, you mentioned before, yes.
I've literally known Carrie pretty much all my life.
Yeah.
And I always knew she was Carrie, and then she did shows in our local theatre as a member of the local amateur, and then she became famous, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Carrie's doing well.
Yeah.
But Carrie is in it, and she is, well, she's always brilliant to be on.
She is always brilliant, yeah. I've seen her a few things, yeah.
But no, she is.
I saw her name in the cast list, all right, but she wasn't in the first, so I knew she was involved. I knew she's in there.
The stories, I've stopped reading things like blurbs, watching trailers, cast lists. I read nothing and look at nothing, and I try to go into things as blindly as possible.
So
she just appeared on screen. It was
excellent.
A lovely moment.
Excellent.
But no, absolutely.
I've only seen the first one, but I do agree with, and I think that tone I think it's a tough tone to pull off, to make, like, you know, you think of shows like Dexter's, the other one, where you have a character who is basically a serial killer, but for the audience, is likeable and we can feel empathy for her. That's hard to pull
off. Doing it with their
Thought they did really well on the first one. I thought, oh, I like her and I don't like these people that are her targets.
But
it works.
It's interesting because, I mean, it's throwing some conundrums up and it's really, really, anyone that hasn't watched it yet, Obituary. It's on RTÉ on Tuesday nights. It's all episodes are on the
Player. Yeah, that's what I uncovered.
Absolutely wonderful. Dahi, I sometimes say we don't talk enough about books on this show.
Yes.
So let's talk about Kevin Doherty's Penny Babs.
Yeah, Kevin's a writer from Cairn. You had
Deirdre on earlier, yeah.
Deirdre on earlier. Talking about Cairn, it's a great area. And Kevin, we had him down on Culture Night in the theatre doing a little reading from his book Penny Babs, which kind of came out a couple of years ago. But of course, it came out in the pandemic. So he didn't get to do so much with it at the time, he was saying. So it's out about 2 years. It's set in Cairn Donagh. It's set in a supermarket. I think Kevin and his brother run a supermarket up there. Mm-hmm. And it's of the area. It's of the people. It's beautifully written. I mean, it's one of those books you're not battering through it. It's not that kind of book. You're taking it slow. You're taking your time. You're admiring the writing. And there's a lot to admire. But as I say, it's the ordinary people of Cairn, you know. It's and it's the deliveries coming in. It's the people who work there. It's the people on the deli counter. I do wonder how many people in Cairn recognise bits of themselves.
Yeah. I suspect a lot.
Because I don't think a writer ever, you know, one person's not one person.
No,
they're amalgamations. But I'd say there are some people who may have gone along and said, is that me? You know. But really nice guy, Kevin. And really good book. I'd recommend it, you know.
Okay.
And it's great to see things like this getting out there. And
Great, absolutely. Yeah. It comes recommended. Penny Babs by Kevin Doherty. Michael,
Can I just say on that, actually?
Yeah.
Because I saw him doing the reading for 10 minutes, I thought, oh, I must get the book. And it was Kenny's Bookshop in Galway. I actually had it on special offer. So I got it with postage for, I think, under €7, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So,
and maybe there's a challenge to our local bookshops here in the immediate area. You know, guys, we shouldn't have to.
Yes,
the book is written locally. And I want to throw a very quick mention to a book called Prophet. It's a sort of a science fiction book.
That brings
in elements, and it's written by Sin Blashe, who is of this parish. Helen MacDonald. And Sin's been a mate of mine for many years.
Yep. Yes.
We played
the ukulele.
Yes, of course.
And she's one of the ukuleles, along with Ruth.
Yep.
And Ruth happens to be from Cairn Donagh, which is a running theme through the whole show today. But Ruth and Helen, not Ruth, Sin and Helen, have written this book. It's called Prophet. It's the best novel I've read in the past 6 years.
May I say I really enjoyed it. I did get that last month. And that is a book you can batter through.
The
story's just right. You want to know where the story's going.
And you will come up with some theories. And what I love about it is, I was chatting to Sin halfway through reading it, and I said, I've got three theories, and I gave her the three theories. One of them, I'm glad to say, was absolutely spot on.
Excellent.
One of them was, and one was further out than Fannin Lighthouse. And that's the way a book should be.
I know what you mean.
I thought it was very much, it was kind of a bit Terry Pratchett,
there's a bit of Douglas Adams in there.
Certainly with the Dirk Gently stuff, I thought, you know, that kind of area of stuff.
And you know what? You've taken the words Dirk Gently. That's exactly the point of comparison that I made.
As
well.
I really enjoyed it, I have to say. And as I say, it rocks along.
It does.
You know.
So, you know, there's two local books, Sins from around here, from Letterkenny, via California and Dublin and all points. And as you say, Kevin from Cairn. Michael, let's go back to the stage. And you, Dahi, and I share a number of disgustingly talented friends. Very few more so than Mr. Kieran Kelly.
Kieran Kelly,
and he's delivering again.
He is delivering again. That man does not, either he doesn't, I don't think he sleeps. I think he just kind of writes around the clock because he works hard and he's a full-time job as well. His latest, and this is a full-on professional production, it's up in the Ballard Arts Centre and it's on the 12th, the 13th and the 14th. So it's next weekend and it's Drumbo. And what he has done is he has taken real life events and dramatised them and put together this production. It's a play. I've read an early version of the script a couple of years ago and I thought that was cracking. And I know he's done a lot of work on it after, because Kieran is one of those writers. He has his own voice. He knows exactly what he wants to do. But yet he will take feedback on, and you know, there's not a lot of feedback you can give him. When you read something that's really good, there's not a huge amount of feedback you can give. But he does take feedback from people, and he's always fine-tuning and tweaking things. And when it goes into production, Charlie Bonner directing this, they'll make a lot of changes and tweak a lot of things.
I believe so, actually. I was chatting to Kieran about that, and he was saying that Charlie has really taken it
shaped it.
And
no better man than Charlie.
No better man. I mean, that's a very busy, very talented man, a lovely gentleman as well. Yeah, they're disgustingly talented, all of these people, aren't they? Absolutely. And Charlie is one of those guys, you turn on the TV and you see him on TV as well as you see him on the local stage. He's everywhere. He's on Facebook. So
you might hear his voice on Highland Radio ads
once in a while, from time to time. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. As I said, having read an earlier version, and again, it's a historical piece. It's 1923, basically.
It's 100th anniversary this year,
March 23.
The Trumbo Martyrs.
So, exactly, that's what it is. It's March 1923. A brutal, bloody civil war tears the country apart. Anti-treaty prisoners are held at Drumbo Castle in Donegal awaiting execution by firing squad. With the clock ticking towards its inevitable conclusion, Father Stephen McDevitt pays a visit to one of those prisoners, Charlie Daly, in an attempt to extract vital information that could save his life and possibly reconcile him with a former comrade in arms, Joseph Sweeney. You've got three man cast. I think it's going to be absolutely stellar.
Great
night.
Cast as well.
It's a great cast. I think it's going to be an absolutely stellar night.
Yep.
So it's next weekend through the 12th, the 13th and the 14th. And I'm very excited about this. Very excited about getting along to see this.
And presumably this is going to hit the festival circuit as well and could make major inroads in that.
I don't know what they're going to do with it. Yeah. This is a professional show.
Of course, yeah.
It's a professional show, yeah.
Of course, so, yeah.
I don't know what there is. I don't know if there's touring plans.
Hopefully it'll have legs again.
Obviously,
it makes a lot of sense for it to be in Val Buffet because Drumbo's right
it's there.
Yes,
yeah. You
know, absolutely, yeah. So I think it's going to be stellar. It's just going to be a stellar night out, you know. There's no precedent there for any of these gentlemen to drop the ball.
What night are you going?
I think the Friday night is probably what's best for me. I think I'm working Thursday. So Friday night's probably the best for me.
I'm booked in for Thursday.
You're in for Thursday, right? I haven't got a ticket yet, but I'll give you a shout and let you know
for Friday morning.
Gentlemen, it's 21 minutes past 11. I'm going to take a short break back after these. It's heading to 24 minutes past 11 o'clock. Caller says, I really don't like that new programme obituary. Just my opinion, an opinion, caller, to which you are absolutely entitled. Dolly, I want to go back to you and Starstruck on Netflix. That's been catching your attention recently.
Yeah, I read recently that the third season's coming out. Now it's on HBO in America, which usually ends up on Sky, maybe.
Yeah.
But I was happy to find that the first two seasons were on Netflix. So I dived in. I mean, I've been having a lot of success and really enjoying Australian shows. And the writer of this, Rose Matafeo, writer and star, she's a New Zealand comedian, so I hadn't done any New Zealand, so I thought I'd dive in. And it's a rom-com, but again, much like with the Australian stuff, with the Colin from Accounts and those kind of shows, it's almost, the clichés aren't there that we're used to with rom-coms, the soppiness or whatever. It's very straight up, straightforward, you know, the tell it like it is kind of thing, which I really enjoy. So there's Rose Matafeo, Nikesh Patel, and the basic setup is she's out for a night with her mates, meets a guy, goes home with him, finds out the next day he's a famous movie star. And the relationship goes from there, and the trials and tribulations of an ordinary person dating a star. You know, there's a lovely moment early on where she's leaving his house in the morning and all the paparazzi are outside and they're all clicking away, and then someone goes, oh no, wait. It's just the cleaner. Stand down. Sorry, love. Didn't mean to get in the way you're doing your job. You know, so it's very funny, very enjoyable. They're about 22 minutes long, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they're very, Starstruck. Very, very watchable.
Starstruck. Because you recommended Colin from Accounts to me, and I loved that show. I got to take note of this one. Yeah. Okay.
So
it's on Netflix. Okay.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Two seasons there. I rocked through it in a week.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to the third season. I thought it dipped slightly towards the end of the second season, but the reviews for season three are huge.
Hmm.
They're saying they've really knocked it out of the park.
Wow, okay.
So I'm really interested to see where they go with it.
Right. Look forward to checking that
one out.
That sounds right up my street. Gentlemen, I'm going to give you two a chance to catch your breath because there's a very special show coming up in the Millennium Forum in Derry on the 11th of November. I'm going to go right back to the days when I started in radio in the early to mid-1980s. And when I started in radio, I worked on a few stations up and down the country. I worked in Waterford, I worked in Limerick. And one of the absolute Irish stars when I was starting out in radio as a DJ in my early 20s was Mary Black. And she remains one of the best singers in this country. Mary is embarking on her 40th anniversary tour. She obviously keeps a picture up in her attic because she looks really well for it. Mary Black, a very good morning to you. And Mary joins us, my friends on Zoom. Mary, hello to you.
Hello, Donald. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Mary, 40 years in the business is a great achievement for anyone to make. Are you as enthusiastic and as in love with music as you were back in those heady days when you started?
Well, yes, I'm enjoying it more now than I ever did. I mean, I suppose as life goes on, you change, your attitudes change towards everything. And I suppose in the early days, I was more like enthusiastic about learning new songs and, you know, trying new ideas and recording albums and all that. And as life goes on, you slow down a little bit in that department. But to be honest, the gigs have been so enjoyable. And I know in my heart, it's not going to go on forever. I'm getting to that stage where I have been winding down abroad and all that sort of thing. And so Ireland is my last place. And I did want to mark the 40th. I think it is something that should be marked. You know, it is a long time to be since my first solo album back in 1983. So you must be nearly as old as me. And you're looking well yourself.
Oh, thanks very much indeed. I mean, people, when someone like yourself is doing a show, there's going to be two sort of, I suspect, two different sort of threads of people in the audience. There's going to be the people who have followed your careers over the years and they know all the albums and they know all the songs. And there's, let's not put too fine a point on it, there's going to be the people who are going to hear Katie and No Frontiers and songs that were out 35 years ago because they're the ones that they know. And it's, I suppose, a challenge to an artist like yourself to try and make sure that you keep the long-term fans happy, but you also draw the fair-weather people who know the hits into the concert and give them a similar experience.
Yes, there is that. That's very important. And it's important to me if I go to a concert of, you know, I mean, I remember going to see Bob Dylan a few years back and I didn't recognise one song he sang and I was very disappointed. And I am one of those people, you know. So I would always make sure I do the big songs. You know, I have, I suppose, it's about a half a dozen of them. And occasionally I'd leave out something and people, somebody might be disappointed. But I have a lot of albums and recordings too. You know, I have a big, big well to draw from. And I do change those around and I bring in new songs. For example, I'm going to be doing a couple of songs from the first album, which I don't think I've done since I started out.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing something new in that way. And I'm bringing, I suppose, my gigs have become more and more like a big sing song. You know, even young people are coming in their in groups, you know, girls, particularly women, I think, like in their 30s, who know all the songs through their parents, being brought up and brainwashed with Mary Black when they were kids. And now they know all the songs, you know, they know every word of Bright Blue Rose and they're singing and they're going like they're going back to their childhood, as music can bring you back to a place. And that's what they're there for. And I think that's all of that, that nostalgia. I mean, I feel it too. There is something that's wonderful about it. And it's music can take you places that you haven't been for a long time, you know?
But a 40-year career is not sustained on nostalgia alone. A 40-year career isn't sustained on just singing the same six songs over and over again. You've been always reinventing yourself, bringing out new music, finding new sounds. And over the course of that career, you've been finding your own voice and developing your own voice. The Mary Black that's going to stand on the stage of the Millennium Forum on the 11th of November is not necessarily going to be the same Mary Black who would have stood on the stage of the old Rialto or Frankie's in Rafaux or wherever back when you were starting your career.
Absolutely. It was a different voice. It was a different person. I mean, I didn't have, you know, I was kind of scared back then, you know, and I had very self kind of doubt about what I was doing, whether I was good enough, all the things that youth and I suppose lack of experience brings when you're young, you know, when you kind of, you know, you don't know where you're going and then you're juggling babies. And I had three when I was quite young in my mid-20s to late 20s. And so it was kind of a mad time. It's kind of like a blur almost, you know, because I was so busy. And when you're juggling kids and a career and building something, it's just like, whew, And it's only when you get into your 40s, I think, and 50s, you begin to learn. I mean, you can't teach someone experience. They have to go through it. And I went through it, and I, you know, we worked on albums. I had great musicians and producers that I worked with that I was very lucky to have, like Declan Sinnott and Bill Shanley then stood in when Declan left 13 years into my career. You know, and it was all these things play a huge role. It's not just about me and the songs. It's about a whole group of people who have created this sound over time. And, you know, every album did bring something new. I went to LA and recorded with Larry Klein back in the early 2000s. And that was a huge experience. I mean, he was on the phone to Joni Mitchell when I'd be sitting in the studio with him, and I'd be going, oh my God, he's talking to Joni Mitchell. And that's the closest I've ever got to her. But, like, you know, experiences like that are just amazing, you know.
Now, I've been calling you Mary since we started, which is potentially slightly remiss of me because as of March of this year, you are in fact Dr. Mary Black.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. Well, my husband always calls me Dr. Black anyway, because I always have, you know, a cure for everything. And I know we're all, I just am one of these people that pick up on stuff. But yeah, very honoured to have a doctor for my contribution to Irish music. And it was a wonderful day. And there was lots of great people who received them alongside me. Paddy Glacken, Trina O'Donnell, Andy Irvine, so many great, yeah.
And in terms of the upcoming RTÉ Radio 1 Folk Awards in Vicar Street, who is it that's getting the Lifetime Achievement Award again?
Oh, no, that was me last year.
Last year? Oh,
a lot of things happened to me last year, yeah. Good things and bad things, I suppose, too, because we lost our tour manager, Damien McCollum, to cancer. I lost a couple of friends. And so it was a real mixed bag of emotions last year for me. And even into this year, because Seamus Begley died in early January. So I said, gosh, I hope this year is going to be better. So far, so good. But up and down, life is like that, though. You don't know what's around the corner, you know?
Mary, it's been wonderful. And as I say, you know, I was working in radio when No Frontiers came out. And believe you me, pretty much every show I did back in those days in the mid-80s, you know, the album was being played. And I think it's fair to say that it was one of the great Irish albums of the 80s, if not one of the great albums of the 80s, full stop, the end. A lot's happened since then. And people can go to see you in the Forum in Derry next month, expecting to hear the hits, expect to hear Katie, No Frontiers, etc. But also expect perhaps to be surprised and to see sides of Mary Black that many people didn't necessarily know existed.
That's right. And I've become more, I suppose, vocal from a conversational point of view. I kind of talk a little bit more, explaining my life experience, explaining where songs came from, about the writers. I've always done that anyway, because I've had great songwriters, Jimmy McCarthy, particularly Noel Brazil, amazing songwriters. So it's that's all been very, very good for me. But I like to communicate with an audience in not just through music. So for that reason, I think people do sit down and enjoy. It's like having a conversation with me as well as hearing the songs and all about them. So, yeah, and it's good fun. There's so much fun at my gigs. People just want me to have a good time, and I want them to have a good time. And that's the way it is. It usually ends up everybody singing.
Well, that sounds to me like a real recipe for success. Mary, it's been an absolute pleasure. Mary Black, 40th Anniversary Tour, Millennium Forum, on the 11th of November. I'm sure it's going to sell out, selling like hotcakes at the moment. So if you're planning on travelling in for that, get your ticket fairly quickly. In the meantime, Mary, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks so much, Donald.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. You're very welcome back. We're joined in studio as our entertainment slot by the wonderful Michael Leddy and by Dahi Ramsey, who is the marketing manager at Ungrainin Theatre. And it's to Ungrainin we want to go now, because I know a lot of people will be watching sport on their TVs tomorrow night. I will not be watching sport tomorrow night. I'll be sitting in the front row of Ungrainin, because one of my absolute favourite contemporary folk acts will be on the stage. Dahi, the Untanks.
Yeah, I mean, the Untanks are amazing, you know. They are a folk, how would we describe them? Harmonic singing group, I guess, from the Northumberland area in England. And I think the first time I saw them, I mean, they came to the Regional Cultural Centre many, many years ago. Sean Hannigan, who was the director then, was a huge fan. And he brought them. And I remember seeing them and thinking, "What? This is amazing. Mm-hmm. Why isn't Ireland embracing its harmony folk singing culture, because we obviously have it. And I couldn't understand why England and Wales and those countries were doing this in Scotland and we were not. And it's fantastic now to see bands like Anor and, you know, people like that taking that up, because it is so beloved. But the Unthanks, I think, their harmonies are quite astonishingly good. And I don't really know what to say about them, I suppose, except they're captivating.
At the core, you have two sisters.
Yeah,
there's who are the Unthank sisters. That is their surname. That's where the...
Rachel.
You get there.
Becky and Rachel, Rachel's husband is in the band as well. And I've seen them with four. I've seen them with 10.
Yeah.
I've seen them with 6. I mean, every time they come, they bring a different configuration depending on what musicians they have. And they are, the harmonies are great. And some of the songs, what they do is they take old songs and they give them new life. They did a version of Shipbuilding, I remember the last time I saw them.
Oh, the Robert White song. Yeah.
That was.
Oh, well.
I'm sorry. To my mind, it was written by Elvis Costello, first recorded by Elvis Costello. But the watermark, I mean, I think for everyone, the watermark version of Shipbuilding is the Wyatt one. But certainly they are great. They do a wonderful song too, and they tend to do it, I think, at most shows. It's called The Testimony of Patience Kershaw.
Oh, right.
Which is a staggeringly... When you talk about social history, what happened was in the mid-19th century, a commission of investigation was launched into children working in mines. And this well-meaning social reformer went around mines interviewing children who worked in them, and he interviewed a girl called Patience Kershaw. And this song, the Testimony of Patience Kershaw, is effectively based on the transcription of what this real girl said to this commission of inquiry into mining. And the papers were published as part of the publication of government papers. So it's they sing the words, but the words are actually, with a few changes made just to allow for rhyme and meter and timing and so on. The song is literally what was said in the... It's the voice of the girl herself, Patience Kershaw. She was a real girl.
Isn't that what great folk music does? Yeah. It is the story of people. It's the history of the people, and that's what it does.
I will be honest. The first time I heard that song, there was tears streaming down my face. Amazing.
Yeah, the work turns up a lot on TV as well, because there's one of the pivotal scenes in The Detectress, which is a show I absolutely loved. The magpie song, turns up in that. Wurzel Gummidge, they did, I think, all the music for.
Oh, okay.
Three for a girl.
Two things that are on my list for a long time.
Oh, we've set him off.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm only paying to talk. And you can thank your lucky stars.
Someone put 50p in Donal.
However, I do want to, and there's an ABBA show, just to completely change the tone.
Yes.
The ABBA show tonight.
Yes. ABBA Sensations. Yeah. So, I mean, this is the thing. We try to do something for everybody. We try to hit across all markets in the theatre. We obviously have Declan O'Rourke, who's an amazing singer-songwriter, next week as well. Yeah. But ABBA Sensations tonight, it'll be great crack.
Yeah.
Come along. Yeah. You don't have to put your flares on, but you can. Yeah. Skinny jeans are out anyway. So come along, enjoy ABBA. It's going to be a real fun night. There's a great crowd coming. Still some tickets left, but there's a great crowd coming. Same with the Unthanks. Still a few tickets left. Get in there, you know.
Good.
But tonight, it's just about fun. It's about having a laugh. I imagine, I shouldn't be saying this, but I imagine people won't be in their seats for long.
You know? Good. Well, that's the way it should be. Yeah. And I want to give, if people want another musical alternative, as the old Python quote went, and now for something completely different, Donegal Voices, which is a choral group made up of members of choirs from all over Donegal, are doing two shows. There's one tonight in St. Michael's Church in Ballyshannon. There's one next week then, next Friday night, in St. Connell's Church in Glenties. And we're performing Mozart's Coronation Mass. We're performing Mendelssohn's Christus and excerpts from Mendelssohn's Elijah, as well as some other solo and semi-choral pieces as well. And some wonderful soloists. That's happening, as I say, St. Michael's Church, Ballyshannon, tonight at 7:30. St. Connell's in Glenties next Friday night at 7:30. There's no entry in, but there is I love the phrase, a retiring collection as you leave the church. And it's going to be two nights of wonderful choral music and some absolute...
We're so blessed. Yeah. We're so... the variety of what you guys are just chatting about in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, the variety. Like, yeah.
So you can have ABBA or you can have Mendelssohn and Mozart. Yeah.
But even over the next, you know, tomorrow night and then
so much,
that really is, we're so spoiled. Yeah. We're spoiled, you know.
Michael, you previewed a little earlier. You just mentioned in passing that you'd watched one obituary and then your time got caught up with The Long Shadow. So let's dive a little deeper in there.
Yeah, The Long Shadow, I had said last week it wasn't streaming, but it actually is on Sky, so it is streaming. So I absolutely love this show. It's a difficult show to watch, but I love it. It's going to be in my top 10 at the end of the year, no doubt. So I ended up kind of watching episodes every night, and some nights I got in quite late. So that's why I didn't see any obituary this week. I was like, I'm going to watch another one. So I'm nearly finished The Long Shadow, which is ITV's 7-part series looking at the Yorkshire Ripper. It's a difficult watch because it focuses almost exclusively on the victims and potential victims. And it does not focus on any of the violence. There's no violence in any of the episodes at all so far. Obviously, we're told what's happened to the victims, but they don't show anything, so it's not, and we don't see the Ripper directly, so it's not that kind of show. It's not salacious, or it's not, I don't think it's kind of, it's not unsavoury in the way it's treating this material, I think. I think it gets better. Episode 4, the way the story was told was absolutely stunning, I thought, and 5 as well. What I really appreciate about the show is that they're very clever with what details they give you. They put characters on screen, but they sometimes don't tell you the names of the characters, and they leave it to the last scene maybe to tell you who's who or what's what. And I thought that was a great way to tell this story, the details of which are reasonably well known, I think. I mean, not everybody knows the ins and outs of it, but certainly my generation, it was something we remember growing up with and something we remember being on the evening news. The hunt for, and you know, et cetera, for the Yorkshire Ripper. It's really dark. It's extraordinarily sad. But now that I'm nearly finished it, I'm going to finish it tonight. I absolutely give it a thumbs up. It's riveting viewing. The performances, Toby Jones,
he is
an actor.
Amazing.
Toby Jones is amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, and David Morrissey as well. The way the show works is every episode almost has a different main cast. Because the story, the what's annoying about the story, and I mean that in a good way, is that the police, there was a lot of politics and there was a lot of very bad decisions made. So certain policemen were shoved aside at certain times. So you don't have a protagonist who's common to all 5 episodes. What happens is major characters in episode 1 and 2 might only be have a cameo in episode 3. You know the way it works. Yep. It's story driven and it has a different main cast every time. But they're fantastic. David Morrissey, Daniel Mays was in the early episodes. Lee Inglesby, who I've seen in a lot of things in the last couple of years. I love to hate him in this. He has created a character. It's as close as I've come to throwing my mug of tea at the television screen when some of the things and some of the stuff that person did in real life or whatever. Stephen Tompkinson is in it as well as a coroner and so forth. The cast is amazing. George Kay, who wrote it, did Hijack, which I know Greg had been watching, which was the thriller that Apple had on. It's absolutely stellar, and I thought the first episode was very good, but by episode 4 and 5, I was like, okay, I'm gonna blow through this week, so I'm gonna finish it tonight, and I would heartily recommend. Episode 3 is on Monday night. And if you have Sky, they have the whole lot streaming, or you can access them all. So
you are the most disciplined person I know in terms of planning out viewing.
I'm going
to watch one program a week.
Yeah.
And on the 27th of March I'll be watching this. For you to actually say, I've binged a program, that should be a headline.
It's rare.
I mean, that says something in itself, let's be honest.
I watched 2 episodes last night and I was like, I would almost have sat up late.
You to watch 2 episodes a week of something strange.
I know, it's really rare. It is rare. So, that's why Obituary got squeezed out. And I'm still finishing, you're absolutely right, I'm still finishing Poker Face, which is an amazing show, but I still have the last couple episodes to watch. But I dragged it out all year deliberately to savour it. And I watched an episode last weekend with the two ladies in the retirement home. And that was stunning television. So I'm like,
it is a great episode.
It's great. And the casting. So I do like to prolong things. When there's only 10 episodes of the thing, I'm like,
Conversely, Pauline and I did Poker Face in 7 days.
Yeah. Well, I always think of Sharon Horgan, you know, who did the Sisters show, Bad Sisters. I saw her in an interview. I'm a big fan of her. I haven't seen all her work and I haven't seen that. But she said, from a creator's point of view, you pitch something, you go through that process, you write it, you film it, you devote years of your life, maybe 2.5 years of your life to this thing. And then he says, she said, and it's on YouTube, or interview, she says, and then they put it out in one night, and everybody watches it in one night. And she used a very bad word. She said, you know, if that, you know, people should savour these things and make them watch.
If you want a new season of something, Netflix decides, the streaming services decide on the views in the first month.
You're right.
By binging it, I am contributing to the possibility of a new season. Well, I'm helping.
There we go.
I'm doing my bit.
Right.
I wanted
to take a comment from Kevin from Dunloe, because the last time we did the show, it was the week before last, I did mention my love for The Princess Bride. I regard it as the greatest film ever made and will continue to do so. And I did mention that I do
incredible
have a T-shirt.
Yeah.
I do have a T-shirt that has the tagline in Irish. It's basically a picture of Mandy Patinkin, and it just says, Diagach, Inigo Montoya is Anam Dom. Morig Tuma Ahar. Be Ray con boss at all, which is on it. And he was asking where I got it. It was a birthday present from my daughter, and I am 99.9% sure that she got it where most great Irish T-shirts are got, and that's from Hairy Baby. Which is the source of most great Irish T-shirts. It's on Hairy Baby, as far as I know. But then Kevin goes on to mention another, and I love this line, now for another esteemed radio host. Frasier is returning after its first airing 30 years ago. It's the story of how the two got together. I hope it goes well. Although Niles Crane, in my view, was the real star of the show. Agreed, actually. Frasier picked up a host of awards, and a trailer has dropped. It's due to begin airing on Paramount Plus from next month. Michael, I know you actually have this on your list as well, because it interests you.
Yeah, it interests me greatly. I've mentioned it numerous times. I love Frasier. I think most people who are fans of sitcoms and American sitcoms definitely love Frasier. I mean, my heart also belongs to Cheers.
I'm more Frasier.
But Frasier, particularly in the early seasons, the first five or six seasons, it was some of the sharpest and best farce. When they went to do farce, which is very rare in American sitcom, and those episodes where they might all go to a hunting lodge, but there was a one misunderstanding 5 minutes in, and then everybody spent the rest of the episode running around. Those kind of episodes are The Innkeepers, where they had a restaurant, I think is maybe the best sitcom episode of the 1990s, up there with the best of Seinfeld. The trailer is on YouTube, and it's a chance for us to get a look. Like you said, Donal, sometimes you're better off not knowing a lot of things, and I do avoid trailers sometimes, but this was one I embraced and watched a few times, and I have read up on it. I wanted to see what they were doing. So the new show, based on the trailer, which is only about a minute and a half long, we get to see Nicholas Lyndhurst, who is the best friend of Frasier in this new series. They've been work colleagues. And Frasier is back in Boston, and we see that he is living, I think he's going to be living with his son.
I mean, Sorry to interrupt, but that's very interesting casting, because we're talking Rodney from Only Fools.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
of course,
that's
what we're saying.
Yes.
So Rodney is now in Frasier.
Is in Frasier, yeah.
He was good in Goodnight Sweetheart now, in fairness.
But those of us of a certain age will remember that he was also in Butterflies back in the 70s. And I loved
with Wendy Craig. Yeah.
Carol Lane.
If I could sing like Donal, I'd sing that. But I can't.
Thank heaven for it. And I won't.
What they've done, which I think is clever, is, as you remember in the original Frasier, Frasier's dad was a blue collar man, a worker. Yeah. So now they flipped it, and the son is a fireman.
Right. You see, this is the thing for me. Frasier without John Mahoney as the father. I mean, you talk about David Hyde Pierce, who was an incredible actor.
Absolutely.
But John Mahoney was a bit of a scene stealer.
Yeah.
He would, and he had that thing, if they'd let him steal the scene and walk off. And he got to do the...
He would drop the line.
Back to him,
they would sometimes give him... I agree with you. They would give him the killer line of the scene was his.
And he would
walk off.
And then he'd walk off. And like,
he'd just do the thing going off.
Yeah, with the walker. And Frasier without him, I'm nervous. I have to say, I'm nervous about it.
A lot of people have said, I mean, they're not bringing back the rest of the cast, but I'm okay with that. I think they're just taking the character at the next stage of his life. He's back in Boston. He's no longer in Seattle. He's back in the city that we first met him in, because he was a regular and a main star of Cheers for many, many years.
He came in
season three, and I'm rewatching those early episodes of Cheers where he's now in it. And I'm hoping, and I have seen this come, a few people have said that if Frasier is a hit, and I think it's going to be a hit, I think it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing we'll see is Cheers back, because Ted Danson is working away and he's really busy, and his most recent show has just finished, where he's the mayor, I think.
Could they get Woody Harrelson back there?
He'll do a cameo, I think, because they all stayed friends.
I often say that's the best switch of a character ever in sitcom.
Coach to Woody.
They took Coach to Woody.
When Nicholas Colasanto passed away.
Right up there.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I have just looked at my clock, and my clock is telling me we have about 11 to 12 minutes of stuff to get through in 4.5 minutes. Before we do anything else, can we just please remind people, if you were listening to Greg during the week, Jessica McKean is taking part in Junior Eurovision on TG Cahir. You can vote every hour on tgcahir.ie. Junior Eurovision. So all the best to Jessica. You've heard her on the show with Greg during the week. tgcahir.ie. Junior Eurovision is the address to vote there. Now, I'm going to put this to one side. Dáthaí, I want to talk in the last few minutes, I want to talk audio. And I want to throw one recommendation out there. There's an original on Spotify. It's an audio drama called Case 63. It's performed by Julianne Moore and Oscar Isaacs, predominantly, with some other guests coming in. The first series dropped last year. The second series dropped in September. Episodes are between 8 and 16 minutes long, depending on the episode. And it's an absolutely wonderful story. Just want to chuck it out there. If you're on Spotify, if you're going for a walk, just preload a couple of episodes of K63. It's drama of the highest order. But you wanted to reference Naomi Klein's On Conspiracy Theories as a podcast.
Yeah, it was an episode of 10% Happier, which is a podcast I listen to a lot, which has the aim of making you 10% happier. Mm. But it was Naomi Klein talking about doppelgangers first. And she gets mistaken for Naomi Wolf. Both of them wrote kind of interesting books about largely anti-establishment, I guess, in some ways. Naomi Klein kind of came to prominence with No Logos and talking about how our society works, capitalist society in a sense works. And the two of them get mixed up because they're both Naomis. Now, during the pandemic, Naomi Wolf got increasingly supportive of kind of some of the more outlier theories around the pandemic.
Right.
I don't want to get lots of people ringing in.
Yes.
Yeah. But what would largely be termed conspiracy theories.
Yes.
And, of course, Naomi Klein was getting people saying, well, now Naomi Klein's gone a bit crazy, hasn't she? You know, and she was getting the flag for it. And so she kind of did a dive into this in terms of why and how people get involved in conspiracy theories and how they go right down the rabbit hole. From a starting point that where you would have agreed with a person, where you would have been very much in sympathy with a person's views, and then you look back in 2 years later and you're like, what has gone on in the meantime? And how, and investigating all of that in terms of, well, can people come back? And, you know, I suppose conspiracy theories and ideas, I mean, there's that, I saw a comedian talking about, you know, okay, I get that you don't believe all conspiracy theories, but if you don't believe any, I'm more worried about you. Because, you know, we know
stuff happens, yeah.
There's got to be some things, you know. There are clearly billionaires influencing the media, for example, you know, and societies and governments. But it's what you do with that and where you go with that idea, you know, that she found fascinating. And as I say, it's kind of like a domino effect. It's a little bit... Okay. So I'd give it a listen. She's a very intelligent woman.
Out, actually.
You know. Sounds very good, actually, because I've been listening to a couple of good podcasts and things like Knowledge Fight. Okay.
Michael Eddy, Dáthaí Ramsay, a pleasure speaking to both of you this morning.
Great pleasure.
It appears Cairn Donnell's been a recurring theme over the course of today's show. So let's finish with telling you that there's a coffee morning in Cairn Donnell Boxing Club for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's been ongoing since 10. It lasts until 2. Donations going to the Friends of the Hospitals in Inishowen and Letterkenny. So that's an ongoing coffee morning in Cairn Donnell Boxing Club for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It goes on until 2 o'clock, and lots of great stuff happening in Cairn. So if you've been partaking of all the great stuff happening in Cairn and you fancy a rest, grab a coffee, grab a pastry. For myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a wonderful weekend and have a great day. Thank you indeed to Donna Marie for producing and for taking your calls. Thanks to all our contributors. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Good morning.